a senior vice president of a company that provided services throughout the industry, including for Mount Yankee, and actually provided the nuclear fuel racks that were used in this design. So that's one of the problems at Fukushima, is this Mark I design has its nuclear fuel racks way up in the very top of the building. And it creates an earthquake problem and also a fire and terrorist hazard. And all of those can occur as well at Vermont Yankee.
Can you talk about TEPCO saying that they were optimistic that they could bring down radiation at the damaged plant and go to a cold shutdown of the facility in 6 to 9 months? That's in Japan.
It's a really optimistic schedule. It's a really optimistic schedule. The cold shutdown means that there's no more boiling in the reactor and it's at atmospheric pressure. And in order to do that, there are cooling systems that are in those buildings that have exploded. So they're actually trying to build a new system outside of those buildings, and they're frantically trying to procure heat exchangers and pipes and pumps and valves. This in the middle of many seismic aftershocks. I think the biggest concern with their schedule is twofold. One is aftershocks are likely, and these buildings are damaged. So a severe aftershock could really set them back or, more importantly, release a lot of radiation.
Will radiation be leaking for the 6 to 9 months?
Radiation is leaking every day now, both liquid into the ocean and also airborne. When you see those clouds of smoke coming out of the unit, that's not steam, that's radioactive steam. So they're releasing radioactivity as an airborne. And also, probably more important right now, is Unit 2. The reactor has a hole in it and the containment has a hole in it. So they're pouring water in the top and it's running out the bottom. And it's what's causing all of this this enormous amount of high-level radioactive waste.
Arne Gundersen, we're going to have to leave it there. I thank you very much for being with us. Nuclear whistleblower speaking to us from Burlington, Vermont. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much. Ending last Thursday.
Hi, I'm Jerry D. with your WUSB Concert Billboard for April 18th through the 21st. On Monday the 18th, the Persuasions will be at the Blue Note in Manhattan at 8 and 10:30 p.m. The Shirelles will be at B.B. King's, also in Manhattan, at 8 p.m. For Tuesday the 19th, P.J. Harvey will be at Terminal 5 in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Vlada will be at the Bitter End in Manhattan at 8:30 p.m. And Mieka Pauly will be at the Spike Hill Bar in Brooklyn at 10 p.m. For Wednesday the 20th, Joe Sample will be at the Bolton Center in Bayshore at 8 p.m. P.J. Harvey will be at Terminal 5 in Manhattan at 8 p.m. And the Ravenettes will be at the Music Hall of Williamsburg at 8 p.m. in Brooklyn. For Thursday the 21st, British Sea Power will be at the Bowery Ballroom in Manhattan at 8 p.m. The Ravenettes will be at the Music Hall of Williamsburg in Brooklyn at 8 p.m. And Mogwai will be at Webster Hall in Manhattan in the evening. This has been your concert billboard for April 18th through the 21st. Tune in to WUSB each day to hear more about where your favorite performers are playing, or go to the online concert billboard at WUSB.fm, which has the schedule for coming months, so you can plan ahead. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
Yeah, and I do believe the Mogwai show is indefinitely postponed, but you guys can check on that yourselves if you were taking notes. It is now 6:02 in the p.m. on a Tuesday evening, and that can only mean one thing on WUSB Stony Brook.
So what else did we do in Montreal? We went up to the mountain.
Yeah, we visited the mountain.
Mont Royal.
That was interesting. We went to sort of a cool part of town. And we figured out the buses. There was like two different buses we had to take.
I have to come to a quick stop. That's one thing that's Canadian drivers, or maybe it's Ontario and Quebec drivers, they love to slam on brakes and come to quick stops. It's really no such thing as gliding to a stop here.
Yeah, we saw some particularly brave Canadian drivers. You know, there was that guy in the big truck. It was like a big a pickup truck. And boy, he was like straddling a lane. He was cutting people off. He was
brave. Brave is the word you want to use for that? Or brazen? I think brazen is a
better. That's a much better word. I think that's what I was reaching for. Yeah, brave. Brave is too honorable. I don't know if that's as worthwhile a term for him.
A truck driver is giving us a look from the right hand side down at our microphone. How you doing? Yeah. It does look unusual. I granted to see someone interviewing somebody while they're driving. But that's what we do. So deal with it. The driving here is weird. A lot of bad drivers. I'm not sure why. At least around Montreal especially, that's what I've noticed. People just not signaling and just swerving into lanes and coming to abrupt stops. And
tailgating.
We rented a car because while we're having the smart car fixed, we have to get around. So we rented a car. And literally as soon as we got into the car, we almost got hit by somebody else. So that was a lot of fun. We had to slow down a little bit, but now it seems to be, it's slowing down again. They have half the road closed now.
Yeah, it's some sort of paving, I guess they're doing. There's a lot of construction. We've been in a couple stop-and-go highway traffic jams. It's sort of an annoyance, but hey, you know, that's life. That's real life. And, of course, it was a holiday weekend. We had a little bit of that kind of traffic. And
now that we've come to a complete stop, I can appreciate the cones that are here, and it says Coco Paving on it. Now, is that a private company that has its own little barriers, little cones? What else? Those aren't cones. Those are bigger than cones. They're things that keep cars from going into lanes. Had the name of a company, or maybe that's the town. Maybe we're in the town of Coco. But this one over here has another name. It's Lafa or something. As I go 1 kilometer an hour, I'll be passing by it in a second.
Lafarge. Maybe one's a manufacturer, and then one is the actual paving company.
I've just never seen a name of a company on a traffic cone thing.
Yeah, that's a bit different.
What
so we should get back to the mountain, right? I mean, we figured out the bus system. We had taken 11 to actually get to the top.
You remember the exact bus number. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I just remember there was a bus. That's all I remember.
Well, we had to take one to get to that stop, and then remember she said 11, and we didn't quite understand what she was saying, but I found the stop. It was 11. And then, so we got on his bus, and we went all the way to the top and then all the way back down.
Do you remember what bus she was?
Oh, Lord. You know, I don't.
I think it was 97 or something like that, or 87. I think there was a 7 in it.
Yeah, 7 sounds about right. But this was this cool, kind of young neighborhood, had a lot more life. Downtown Montreal, I mean, there was, like, sort of popular touristy districts, but not as much life, not as many people walking around as you might expect in the late night hours. This felt a little more collegey, like a little bit more of a neighborhood where people, I mean, there's businesses, obviously, and stuff like that, but it was a little removed from the downtown and had a lot of, like, boutiques, little shops, and nice places to eat, you know, a lot of different types of restaurants. And so we go from there to get the Montreal, the mountain bus, and that took us up, and then we actually went down the other side. We had to stay on it, and he said, the driver said, you should probably just stay on, and I'll take you right back up the opposite way. And then he took us up to the top, and
oh, it's just an accident. No, it's a dead battery. Somebody pulled over. That's what everybody was stopping for, to see the dead battery.
Yeah, those guys look like the construction workers, too.
Oh, what kind of shape we're in, then.
Yeah, right. The guys paving the road left their lights on so they can't go home or something.
Anyway, so yeah, you're right. We went up the mountain and then quickly down it again because we didn't know where to get off. So we stayed on the bus, went back the other way, and the guy let us off at what he deemed was a good spot to see the city. And we did. We walked around, saw the city from the mountain, and then continued to walk down a road that was not the main road on the mountain. It was nighttime. It was really kind of cool because... Well, I went into the right lane not knowing that it was going to end again and kick me off the road. So I'm back in the left lane now. So we walked around down this dark road. There was a raccoon, and there were occasional people that passed by. It was kind of cool just being there on this mountain in the middle of the city, really, looking out over the city. And it was nighttime, and it was dark. A little bit scary, but not really.
Yeah, it was a cool park with a nice, big, wide walking path. There was other people checking it out. It was very dark at this point. And we went to, like, sort of a lodge and a main lookout, and we were able to see the entire city. It was really, really something to look at. You know, beautiful, lots of lights, and you really could see the expanse of it. You could see the highway we came in on. And it just was a really cool vantage point. It felt like being in the castle in Prague, actually.
And that's the measure of a good city. If you can go to a place, more or less a quiet place, to look out over the entire expanse, you're in a pretty cool place, because that's where you go to relax, that's where you go just sort of reflect upon the entire place that you're a part of. And Montreal certainly is a very scenic place to look down on. So, yeah, that's a cool thing right there.
And you really do get up much higher than you think it'll be. I mean, the mountain doesn't seem as much of a mountain when you're down on the ground, but just that little bit of elevation gives you such perspective. And so there was, you know, other people kicking around up there. A whole bus of tourists came off, and I think that's when we decided to just go for a little walk. And we ended up walking on this very, very dark path the opposite direction we came. We went around the entire sort of top of the mountain, the park at the top of the mountain. It was a nice walk, very quiet. We enjoyed ourselves and then sort of made our way back to the bus stop and got down from there. And I'm really glad we did it.
That raises an interesting point, because that's the kind of thing that when you visit a city, a foreign city or whatnot, you basically tend to stick to what the guidebooks tell you to do. And we always go away from that and just do these weird things where we walk down a dark road for an hour and have no idea where we're going, or we just drive down a road that we have no idea where it's going. And I'm convinced that's how you have the real adventures. That's how you learn things that you would never learn otherwise. That's how you meet people. How do you get individuals who are doing this kind of thing to not be impatient, to do those things willingly? Or if you're with somebody that's doing something like that, to give them a chance and just kind of go along with it and see what happens.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, it's about kind of being out of your comfort zone. I think. And even, you know, if I'm open to it, I get kind of stressed out, and it's tough forging your own path. And you know, why would you walk down a dark path? You know, a lot of people, it's just instinctive, especially, you know, the American, like, safety mindset. There could be animals. It's a park, you know. Gosh, what if something happened to us? All these kinds of things. And then just your own discomfort. We've been walking all day. We've been doing a lot of touring around. And it's always the kind of thing I'm glad when and gosh, I hate saying this because I know how I feel. You get stressed out. But you suck it up and you sort of, you appreciate the effort you made at the time after the fact, because you move on, you get right back into your comfort zone. And I mean, come on, it's boring to just sit in a hotel or to just sit in some touristy location or sit on a tourist bus. You don't get to get that spice of life and that sort of street level view. And you know, when we were in Sarajevo, just sort of walking around, or whether it's being in Montreal, trying to find some services. Maybe we need to pick up some items. Just finding some store or some different thing like that. You end up walking down streets and seeing sort of the real part of life, strange buildings, and trying to figure out what things are. I think it's a real game, and you got to have that enthusiasm, and then just sort of be patient with your own wanderings so that you maintain your stamina.
And be patient with other people's wanderings too. Give them a chance. Give them a chance to explore, make mistakes. I think, and this is one thing that we haven't fallen victim to, at least not yet, where we discourage each other from doing things that might seem a little crazy, and we just sort of see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out, but we tried it. We don't really do foolhardy things, I don't think, but we definitely go off the beaten path. And almost all the time, it pays off in one way or another. We just wind up seeing the most incredible things or having the most interesting experiences, meeting people, trying things that you typically don't try because it's not something that is in the book.
Absolutely. It's that comfort zone. You know, yeah, we all want to be really, really comfortable. And, you know, if you had something that you wanted to do, I could put my foot down. I could be selfish or just not... or behave in a way like I'm just basically not being open, and that attitude, it's great, but it's contagious, and that's not the way you get along.
It's not great. It's horrible, and it is contagious. And yeah, I'm glad we don't do that.
I'm being kind of facetious. I mean, you know, that's great, but it's not conducive of exploring, and it's just it's not a very considerate way of being. And you know what, you might turn me onto something that, you know, I don't realize it could be a lot of fun. And it's sort of like putting that aside and just biting the bullet and really going for it. And there's things for every individual everywhere, and even if it's something you're specifically interested in, I can glean what I like out of it as well. And that's absolutely just a sort of a mindset you have to really drill, you have to practice, you know, to be open to all of that. And I think we really benefit by sharing in that.
Yeah, you mentioned Sarajevo, and that was a great example of that, because you basically just set off down a road, and we were just walking towards an airport, sort of, but we didn't really know exactly where we were going to wind up, and I didn't know what was going on, didn't know where we were heading, but it turned out to be one of the coolest things ever, because we just walked through this small village part of Sarajevo, and saw interesting things, ran into some interesting people, and it was one of the more memorable events that we almost never did because, well, why should we? So when you go places, that's what you do. You just try different things and things that you don't expect to try.
Yeah, and don't be predictable. You know, don't do the predictable thing. Try to explore, find something new that other people haven't really seen and that wouldn't think of, wouldn't try.
Be supportive of other people when they're trying different things as well, because nothing poisons the atmosphere more than just a negative feeling. Like, okay, I've got to prove that this is worthwhile because otherwise this person's going to be angry or have some kind of advantage over me because he'll be right and I'll be wrong. And there's nothing that is worse than that kind of attitude. You just sort of have to see what happens and realize that you're in it together. Well, okay, so we walked around the old town part of Montreal, which is really nice and picturesque and all that kind of thing, and saw some interesting things. Saw some tourist traps, but also saw some interesting things.
Yeah, and we were walking around on this boardwalk. It was sort of sunset. We got some great light, and The trees are turning, so there was a lot of really beautiful scenery. And this this sort of pathway right on the water there had all kinds of touristy things, a little bit, you know, but a lot of people sort of exercising or, you know, throwing a frisbee for their dog, that kind of stuff. And so we went down there and got a couple good pictures. We happened upon like a science museum, and we saw an advertisement for the Hubble movie, and it was showing, and of course it was in French, as everything is in that part of Canada and Montreal. We were right on time, as is expected with our luck. Things generally sort of fall into place, and we walked right in, and it was starting in 6 minutes, and we got to see this movie in 3D. And I'm a real sucker for high resolution photography and beautiful pictures and stuff.
And I'm a real sucker for space.
Yeah, so we really happened upon something that just was meant to be. So we walked in, and of course this movie's in 3D, and so here it began. We were watching this incredible movie on space, and I actually remember when this was going on. And so this is all the footage from the actual event, and it was really cool. Yeah, there were some interesting things about the way they dubbed it, and they made it sort of they dubbed everything. And
yeah, I took exception to that because, for instance, they're showing a news conference that took place years ago, like maybe in the 1970s in America, and everybody is speaking French. So obviously, I had somebody come in to play the part of, I don't know, Nixon or whoever it was I was talking. And that just seemed like a little over the top. I would have put subtitles there at least and simply had a narrator in French, but have the actual real people talk in their actual voices. But I guess that's just a style.
I have a theory, and I don't think it's I don't have any evidence. I can't back it up, but I think they do that to make it really, like, overly accessible for young kids who are coming to see something about science, and they want to make it just incredibly clear what happened historically. Maybe they can't read, maybe they, whatever the case may be, they want to make it really dramatic, even if it's factual. And so that's why all the sound effects and all of the comments, even if it was American speakers speaking in English, they dubbed everything. Like, even when the astronauts were in the space station, you know, or in the shuttle, or you know, in outer space floating around, I mean, they were dubbing all this conversation as though they were speaking French floating around in the station or in the shuttle. So yeah, that's my theory. I don't know. I can't prove it. It'd be interesting if anybody knows.
It's a good theory, and I think that's probably what's happening. But what we wound up doing was seeing the film with a different narrator. Everyone else gets Leonardo DiCaprio, and we got some French guy. That didn't tear me up too badly. You can more or less keep track of what was going on in the film. I just wish there was more outer space photography. Instead, it was mostly about the astronauts, which was interesting too. It's cool to see them. If you watch NASA TV, you can see them all the time. But it is cool to see behind the scenes where they're goofing around and having fun, because that's an important part of anything.
They showed the actual upgrade of the Hubble in 3D, which was interesting. And they showed a lot of well, a little bit, not a lot. I mean, they basically went back and forth between the actual procedure and then a lot of space imagery and sort of narration over that, and these sort of star field visualizations. And it begged the question, you asked this, and I thought it was it would be very interesting to actually get some information on what was actual photography and what was computer generated, because it was very crisp and very real. And some of the ways that they were doing that zooming in, I don't know, I mean, that I felt like it was very accurate and very real, but I can't imagine having that much ability to zoom on a space camera.
Well, what they did was they started I guess locally, and just simply zoomed all the way to the Orion Nebula, and it just seems so science fiction-y and beyond our capabilities, that if it's even remotely possible to do something like that with a telescope and with photography, my God, we need to have hundreds of these things, because it's just simply staggering the amount of detail that you can get and that you see. Just that shot alone is worth it, but I am dying to know, is that completely real? Was there computer generation involved there, and if so, how much?
And how accurate? If it was computer generated, did they use actual photographs and compile, in other words, like stitch it all together so that, yes, a computer was used to render this, but it's all based on very, very, like, maps, you know, detailed maps of where all these stars are, and it's all, like, to scale, you know what I'm saying? Because it felt very real as you're traveling through this deep space. It feels like you're going at light speed or whatever. You're actually getting there.
Except you see little tiny, you know, pictures of stars, pinpoints, passing you by as you're going closer to the Orion Nebula. And that's not how a star would look if you're passing it by. It wouldn't look the same as you're looking at it in the sky. So I'm wondering if that's one of the effects of simply using a picture and putting 3D imaging on it and then sort of going past that picture. I'm not sure how they did it, but boy, is it fascinating and inspiring. And I think everybody in the theater felt that. So it's definitely worth seeing if you can get a chance to see Hubble. Even if it's in a foreign language, it's pretty incredible. So yeah, we found that at a theater at an IMAX theater down in Old Montreal, and that was kind of a cool way to spend a couple of hours.
Yeah, right on the water there. We also saw some contemporary art, and we saw another movie. I don't know if you want to mention.
Oh yeah, we did, didn't we? Of course, by the time this airs, it's probably going to be an old movie. It's probably going to be out on DVD, and probably be a sequel in the works. But yeah, go ahead. Let's talk about this.
Well, can I say the name? I mean,
I imagine there's no other way people will know what we're talking about unless we do say the name.
All right. We saw The Social Network, or is it just called Social Network?
It's called The Social Network because you have to have the word "the" in front of, or "the" in front of anything if you want people to notice it.
Correct.
That's what I've been taught.
Well, okay. So we saw this movie that basically is a summation, a sort of retrospective on how this social networking site that you may have heard of, Facebook, came about.
The Facebook. Well, that's what it was called originally.
Yes, the Facebook. And at any rate, it had some stars and some people we haven't seen before. And it was cool. It was a sort of a rainy, rainy, rainy night in Montreal. We had such clear weather the whole time while we were in that city, either, you know, at night or during the day. I mean, we'd have these just really, really bright, clear days. But this particular night, we grabbed a bite and we caught this movie because it was just sort of rainy and we had been walking around. And this is actually in the downtown section. It was an interesting film. I don't know. And before that, we got to go to the Contemporary Art Museum, which is right downtown.
I thought we were going to talk about the film, like what it meant to us and how significant social networking is. But we don't have to, because everyone else is talking about that, especially 2 months ago.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
well, it is kind of weird, though, to see people that you used to see on IRC acting like idiots all of a sudden being portrayed in movies by Hollywood stars and becoming billionaires and things like that. It's just kind of a weird feeling.
Yeah, I didn't want to dwell in it. That's why I changed the subject. But, all right.
Oh, wow, my fist is clenched really tightly. Hold on. it just makes you feel, wow, I can't believe this. I can't believe this is... No, it's cool. It's cool. All the best to everybody involved. But, wow. I mean, they're great ideas. And Facebook is a good idea. And that guy Zuckerberg is a real talented guy. But, wow, it's just weird to see. It's just weird to see it all come about like that.
Oh, what? How it's all about money?
It's all about money, and living through the dot-com era, seeing people get obscenely rich, and all these ideas that develop and turn into something that everybody in the world knows about. It's fascinating. It's a fascinating time to be involved, I guess.
I gotta say, I'm really glad you were with me, and we were able to talk about it. Here's something. The fact that, look, these are all Harvard students. There's a lot of students in the world. And this movie is entirely around people who went to an Ivy League school. And it sort of flashbacks between lawsuits and litigation. And we're supposed to be cheering for Mark or his big idea and how it all came about. I gotta say, it had definitely had the Hollywood treatment. I mean, I liked it. I liked the story. all the zingers. I don't know what you want to say, like how powerful he seemed because his attorneys were on top of it. But, you know, you raised some good points. You got to step, but you got to look at reality at a certain point. And it was, in the beginning, I mean, they were accurate with some of the technical stuff with how he was doing it and how he put it together in one night. And they mention at least three times that he's not interested in the money, but the rest of it is basically about money and popularity and the dot-com boom. And I don't know your insights on how that all played out. It's a good reminder to not, you know, to be passionate about something, but not to be just, you know, fixated on other people's success and their story. And I just fear that, you know, you're going to get a lot of these younger people inspired to what? Become venture capitalists? Or I don't know. I mean, I've worked for several companies that have basically been screwed up by venture capital. And they screwed up my life. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't see the big to-do. I don't want to buy it. You know, I don't want to buy into it. And that's sort of what I concluded. I've slept on it.
It's fun to be involved. It's fun to see things develop. But after seeing that, I'm so happy not to be part of it because it takes over your life and turns you into a bad person. And, yeah, like you said, you just become fixated on the money aspects of it. And it's so hard to avoid that. And you lose a vital part of your freedom. But I do think the film was very well written, very entertaining, enlightening. Maybe a little bit of care could have been taken with all the flashbacks and flash forwards, since people didn't really change their appearance that much from one lawsuit to the other, or from the Harvard years to the lawsuit years. And, you know, we're talking about a period of time of only about 5 or 6 years. So that, I think that could have been done a little bit better, but it was definitely entertaining and enlightening. But like you say, I hope it doesn't turn into inspiration, other than inspiration for people to follow their dreams and create things, but not turn into jerks when they do it.
Right, and that line of thought almost, it brings me to like the concept that like competition necessitates innovation, and that's wrong. There's plenty of examples of institutions that have innovated and done amazing things without competition. For instance, Bell Labs. Okay, and I think that there's so much in media that gets young people fixated on competing and being the richest or the having the most of whatever.
There's healthy competition, but then there's also the kind of competition you're talking about now, where it's a race to the biggest bank account. But I think it's good to let the market decide various things and to let people have equal access. Now, Bell Labs, a great example of a place where all sorts of nice things were invented, but they did have a stranglehold on the technology, and that wasn't really good for innovators who weren't part of Bell Labs. So there's a fine line you gotta walk.
Yeah. There's obviously trade-offs, but I don't know. I just I don't know if it definitely wasn't a documentary.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But it's it made me interested in all of it. But you know, boy, I just think there are so many. I don't want to get into Facebook and all that, but I just think there are so many things that could be done better. And so many obvious things that just in the interface and in the features that are available. It's just kind of frustrating when you see how slowly that develops and how kludgy a lot of things are. And you realize there are very talented people out there that can probably do a lot of really cool things, or they just get the opportunity. And we need to make sure they do get that opportunity.
Yeah, and did you notice any product placement in this movie?
Quite a bit, actually. that was something else.
They were using some website. Oh, wait, that's what it was about. Okay, all right, never mind.
Well, it was about their website, but also other products were in there quite a bit. No need to dwell on that. It always seems to happen.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a bit of entertainment for a rainy night. And
It was.
Sure, we'll see more movies about four ball or Dodge Square and all those...
Whatever. Yeah. There's all kinds of crazy things going on.
I can't wait. Yeah, it'll be an entire genre of internet-related film.
So we're driving eastbound on the 401 up here in Ontario, heading from Toronto to Ottawa on our way back to Montreal. We were hoping to pick up the smart car. It's been undergoing psychological treatment now for well over a week, and it's kind of inconvenient not knowing when we're going to get it, but we're supposed to get it. Should have gotten a call by now, actually, from that guy. Phone didn't ring. We have to have the phone on.
No, there's not been a call.
All right. He said it would be ready today. We're not picking it up today. We're picking it up tomorrow. But, you know, if it's not ready tomorrow, I don't know what we're going to do, because we have to return the rental car, and we have to be back in the States. So we have some interesting times ahead of us. Plus, we have to make a detour to a place. Well, not a detour, really, because if we have the car, it's on the way back. But we're going to a place called Drummondsville. Is that right? Drummondsville?
Correct. Drummondsville.
Drummondsville. Very nice place. Not a huge community, but it was on the way from Quebec City back to Montreal when we were driving. And we stopped there. We had a very nice bagel and some, breakfasty type things, relaxed for a while, and just looked out at the scene. There was a skate park nearby. They're always fun to watch, skate parks. So it was fun to watch people falling on their asses and riding bikes up these steep inclines, or just skateboarding.
Hey, there were some pretty good bikes, and those guys were good.
They were good
riders and skaters too.
And some of them didn't fall on their asses. In fact, most of them didn't, I would say. But that's just what you can do at a coffee shop. And we relaxed there while we were driving. But we relaxed a little bit too much, actually, because when we left, it wasn't until we got clear to Toronto. Keep in mind that Drummondsville is halfway between Quebec City and Montreal. We went past Montreal all the way to Toronto. I think it's something like 8-hour drive. And that's when we realized, do you want to say it or should I say it?
Go ahead.
That's when we realized that we had left your camera bag in that very cafe. it was a moment of panic, because that was quite a few moments of panic, because that's your livelihood there, your film camera, your digital camera, and most importantly, that wonderful bag, which is used to carry them.
Yeah, I basically rushed us out of the cafe. I wanted to get on the road. I didn't want to be lingering.
Oh, don't put this on you. It wasn't your fault. It was something we each should have seen. I don't think you rushed us. I think we both left, and we were both very absent-minded.
Well, for future reference, if you have a camera bag and you're traveling with it...
Remember to bring it with you.
Well, that, and you don't necessarily need to keep it on your person everywhere you go. The trunk is a great place. If you put it in the trunk, nobody's going to see it. They're not going to break into your car, because there's nothing. It's out of sight, out of mind. There's nothing enticing them to break into your car. I've had a tendency of keeping the camera with me at all times so I could photograph something, this, that, and the other thing. You know, I have my reasons. And so I brought it in and promptly put it under the table. And as we got up, I didn't even think of it. In fact, probably subconsciously was liberated by not having to carry it. So that's how it ended up staying in Drummondsville. And that's where we're going to head. We're going to stop through there on our way back. But it actually worked out. I don't know, with the map, you looked at that and noticed some things that...
Well, we had a couple of options heading back. One was to simply shoot past Montreal and go out to Drummondsville, pick up the camera, and then go back to Montreal. The other was to go to Montreal and then the next day shoot out there and come back, return the rental car, and pick up the smart car. And then the third option, which I only just came upon by accident, just by thinking creatively, was to return the rental car and then take the smart car and simply drive that out to Drummondsville and then head south and go across the border in a different place, rather than what we were planning on doing, which is going back the same way. And anytime, hold on, I'm about to get kicked off the road here if I don't make a left turn. They do that occasionally. They suddenly say, by the way, this lane is going to be an exit only, and you have very little time. It's already happened. That's how much time I had to prepare. Anytime you don't take the same way back, it's a plus, I think. Like right now, for instance, we're driving back to Montreal, and we're on the same road to a degree, the 401 that we took on the way out to Toronto, but we're making a detour, and we're going over to Ottawa just to make it kind of interesting, and stopping in Ottawa on the way back to Montreal. So we're going a different way. And in fact, we did this when we went to Quebec. We took Route 40 from Montreal to Quebec and took Route 20 going back to Montreal from Quebec. And it's actually a good thing we did that, because that enabled us to stop at that cafe. And I think the cafe, if you had to leave your camera bag someplace, that was probably one of the better places to do it.
Correct. Yeah, you gave me a card for it. They had some interesting art on the walls.
Okay, wait. That was weird. Okay, how that all played out, we sort of have to go into how that played out. Because, yeah, I gave you a card. The reason I gave you a card for that place was because you had just told me that every time somebody gives you a business card, you add them to a mailing list of sorts. I don't think I'm going to say exactly what mailing list, but just, you know, in good fun, add them to a mailing list.
Well, that's correct. I don't have a business card myself. And basically, I get piles of business cards, but no business, and it frustrates me. And to that end, I basically add people's email address to a mailing list, and...
You're never going to get another business card again.
Yeah, never. That's good, you know,
After people hear this, they don't give Kyle a business card, he's just going to wind up on a mailing list.
Well, it just bugs me, it's so passive. It's like, yeah, here's my card, now you have to call me, and all this, like, I don't know, I don't like that whole social, the expectations and this and that. You know, if you want to call me, just call me. If you want to send me an email, write it down, send me an email. But don't just give me something or I give you something and then all of a sudden, magically, something's going to happen. It bugs me that's the norm or that's some standard. And I rebel against that. I don't like the way that hall works because, honestly, for the amount of cards I get, nothing ever happens. I don't know if I'm supposed to call or when I do call, there's nothing comes of it. It's sort of like, I've never gotten a business card that's been life-changing or is anything that's really that great. And
I believe I gave you my business card.
I was getting to that.
Well, anyway, it's this rebellion of Kyle's here that led me to when I saw business cards for this cafe that we were standing in, of course, I handed him one. I said, here's somebody else for your mailing list of rage and pent-up frustration. And you took it, and thank God you did, because when you realized that you had left the bag there, immediately we knew the name of the place, we knew how to contact them.
And that was the first stroke of luck, because I immediately called them. As soon as I'd realized this, we're like hundreds of kilometers away, and she picks up the phone on a weekend, on a Sunday, no less, right?
A holiday weekend. Thanksgiving weekend, because it's Thanksgiving up here.
And she's open till 10 or 11 at night. It couldn't have been better luck. And she spoke fairly decent English, because again, we're in a French-speaking part of Canada, and, you know, English is like sort of... not even seen as a real language. There's one language in this part of the world, and it's French. So, it was a miracle that she was able to console me, understanding immediately the situation, and very clearly said, it's here, it's safe, the boss has put it away, no problem, his name, and this, that, and the other thing. And so I was quite relieved, but also very frustrated with myself, etc. I've since gotten over that, but yeah, basically, it worked out in a way that couldn't have been better, and that's actually now led to us taking a better route home. So that's an interesting bit.
Better because it's different. It's a different route home, not seeing the same things, and that's always a good way to do things.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just, yeah, one piece of our trip back from Quebec City, where we obviously had quite a bit of fun there, and... We had
some audio from that in a previous show, but it was an amazing place. It always is.
Yeah, and it was quite a long ride, and all of the radio stations, we kept scanning around, and basically what happened is there's a certain jack in this rental car, and we don't have the right cable, so we can't connect a music playing device. And that actually turned out to be another bit of good fortune, because we listen to quite a bit of radio, and I love radio. I love talk radio. I like listening to different music, and it's just really cool, especially the French and all of that. And of course, once we got into Toronto at this point, the radio stations became more English-speaking and diverse, very diverse. There was a lot of interesting stations. And so just listening to that whole change as you're driving is sort of amazing and really makes the trip fun. And, you know, we broke out and had some really cool conversations as a result of some of the talk, really like hearty issues in life, getting to actually share and have each other's listening just out of, you know, some little conversation, little topic that they're talking about on the holidays here in Canada. All of a sudden, you and I are sort of having a mind meld, and that's just really cool. That's really good time well spent, and it really made the trip go by, too, as we were making our way into Toronto.
They do radio really well up here because they just seem to appreciate it more. They do a lot of production, both for talk radio, phone interviews, radio drama, you name it. They're doing that for CBC Radio 1 is one station we listen to. That's actually a network. But they have local drop-ins for various regions. But there are also university stations and you know, they play a lot of music on AM, which I think is amazing to hear music being played on an AM radio station like I used to in my childhood years. I don't know, it sounds crappy, but somehow it sounds better when it sounds crappy. It's very hard to explain that concept. I think maybe a scratchy LP being preferred over a crisp CD is another way of showing how somehow it means more that way. We listened to a rap station that was coming from a college in Montreal. They only had 1,000 watts, which on AM is not very much at all, and you can only hear them for a few miles, but it was cool hearing them. It really was. And you just find little gems like that. You tune around the dial and you hear all sorts of amazing things, conversations that just go on for long periods of time. We heard this interview with an author on CBC Radio 1, I think that was on a Sunday, where obviously the interviewer had really done her homework, had read the entire novel, was asking all kinds of probing questions, not only about the novel, but about his childhood, his upbringing, his beliefs, things like that. There were no commercial breaks at all. There were no breaks of any sort for the entire hour. It just went on nonstop, interesting, intriguing the whole time. And at the very end of the hour, she announced that part two of the interview would be airing next week. It's just incredible. I don't think I've ever seen an interview that in-depth in my life. And this wasn't that well-known an author to start with. I mean, to her, I'm sure he was, but just to have that kind of access, that kind of information being given out and shared nationwide, it really was an incredible thing to see. And you get a sense up here in Canada that people do share a lot more of the human stories, the true human stories. We heard of the woman who had 3 bears up in a tree and how that affected her day. And how she had to walk around the tree. Everybody was talking about this. Sometimes you hear stories about dogs. Sometimes you hear stories about a kid being left in a daycare center and, wow, how that's going to change things and people really need to be more careful. The whole country's talking about this one little thing. And sometimes they're very minor stories. Sometimes they're rather silly stories. But you get the sense that it's not as sensationalistic as it is back home. Aren't a lot of fingers being pointed. Aren't a lot of accusations flying, just kind of a conversation, as you say, being started. And you hear people calling up and expressing themselves. I was amazed, really, by the quality of callers on some of the stations, some of the call-in programs. Everybody just having their opinions and backgrounds and being encouraged to share them, not being hurried off the phone, as you hear in talk radio in America so often, just making it a confrontation, people shouting over each other. No, people listen, and they have a lot to say. They have a lot of insight, and that's something that I always bring out of Canada when I come up here. It's just kind of being more laid back and wanting to hear stories, wanting to hear people talk about their lives. And for that, you need to appreciate radio. You need to have that forum that's there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very well said. I think this sneaks into some of the things we noticed just with the whole the camera bag incident and you and I talked about it, that people taking an interest in other people and sharing and, you know, helping. Basically, you know, not being so blasé in that relaxed attitude, or at least just the feeling of care and, you know, that we're in this together, that shared experience comes through. And we noticed quite a bit of that as well, having people reassure you that something's going to, they'll take care of it, or something's going to be okay. When we got into Toronto, we had an interesting experience in the hotel where a woman came in really, really late, and she was just very, very strange, talking about all kinds of really bizarre things, like...
Well, we were sitting there on the internet, because in that hotel, you had free internet in the lobby, not in the room, so that encouraged us to stay down in the lobby, and people would come and go, and you'd hear all kinds of snippets of conversation, but yeah, this was a particularly interesting one while we were sitting there online. She just came in off the street and wanted to know if they had any rooms. She just had this kind of desperate air to her. What do you call it, the actual exchange?
Well, she had a bag or two, and she was at first complimenting, yeah, I should have been in this hotel. And then she says some strange things, like, I've had a bad year. And we were interested, piqued our interest. There's a story here, I think, is what you kind of winked at me. You know, it was very interesting. Yeah, okay, what's going on here? There's something. And we were waiting for it, you know, to just, like, she seemed so desperate, and everything was just so out of control in her world. And there were some other odd things. You know, she couldn't put a deposit on a credit card, and she ended up paying cash, which is very strange.
Not only did she end up paying cash, but she offered to pay a lot more cash because apparently she didn't have the right kind of ID that you needed to stay at that hotel. So she was saying, I'll pay $200 more. And it was just kind of weird hearing this. And to be honest, I don't know if that was accepted or if they found some sort of way to get her in anyway. But it was definitely interesting dialogue.
Yeah, and then she said, you know, she kept mentioning demons and, like, you know, she was trying to get personable with the guy running the desk, asking about, you know, where he's from, even complimented him one time and, you know, said he was handsome. And she was so tired and so needed to get rest that she didn't even want to finish signing any of the paperwork. She just wanted to go up and sleep. And I kind of feel like maybe this is the type of person that's struggling, either homeless, semi-homeless, been bouncing around. She mentioned being in another hotel. I also kind of feel like maybe there was a little bit of substance abuse and drugs involved with her situation. And we noticed a little bit of this, like the homelessness and different, just a different attitude towards it. Even in Montreal, we went into a clinic or a hospital and sort of experienced that a little bit and saw the types of people and then just the way they treat people that are, you know, patients. And then just, of course, you see people on the street. So it was interesting the way she was sharing, and she was just very open that her situation was this and that. And eventually, you know, she was gone, and we didn't hear much more until the next day when checkout arrived.
But let me just interject there.
Yeah, sorry, I'm skipping ahead a little bit.
Well, basically, I mean, my first reaction, I think maybe yours too, is simply to, listen, but don't get involved, because,
right.
it did seem like there would be a lot of luggage, and she did have a lot of luggage, but I mean, emotional luggage too. It looked like there a lot of that would be accompanying any conversation. I'm ashamed to say I am hesitant to plunge into problems of complete strangers sometimes. But people up here seem a little bit different. I mean, there is a degree of that as well. But I have noticed more of a willingness to become engaged in problem solving for people who need help in various ways. And yeah, I think we saw that the next day after what we had witnessed that night.
Absolutely. They were just a little bit more willing to entertain what's going on in her situation. The next day I was down there right around noon doing the same thing using the free internet. And there was a woman that had just arrived, and then there was another woman that was checking out. And she was just sitting there and sort of same struggle, same despair, you know, that tension, anxiety, I don't know what. And what happened is these women started talking to her, and it was sort of an impromptu, like, women's intervention. And they were listening to her. I mean, she was talking about the demons and all of this stuff. And there even a young guy who we had seen using the computer before. He was just a regular young guy with a skateboard, and he was talking to her too, sharing about sort of a place maybe she could go, but, you know, she can't be doing drugs if she goes there. So obviously they got a lot more out of what exactly is bugging her and what she's been going through. And, you know, he was really sweet to her. He was like, look, he was kind of, I was just hearing a little bit, but saying this is the situation. I think he said $145 for 6 days. He was talking about maybe putting her up on at a friend's house or in a place where he knows she could stay. You know, he was basically encouraging her, you know, to rack her brain. Who do you know? Who can you get help from? You can't be bouncing around the hotels, spending all this money if you're in a tough situation. And he said, you know, you got to make the choice. You got to do this. You know, and he had to go. He was doing whatever the heck he was doing. You know, he's just traveling. And he, you know, walked off. And it was just trying to encourage her. And I just thought that was really heartwarming to see a young guy just, he somehow got involved. She explained something to him. And instead of judging her and saying, wow, you know, this is a real basket case or something like that, he was just like, okay, obviously this is coming from somewhere. And he entertained it and tried to work with her a little bit. And the women were doing the very same thing. And in fact, when we walked out for the day, I saw one of the women who had just arrived speaking with her and really playing her game, trying to get a good rapport, good communication going with her. For instance, she was talking about, you know, I've just had so many demons this year. There's, you know, I tried to talk to a church and they tried to get rid of the demons and, you know, this kind of thing. And the woman was like, well, look, it's time. It's okay. You can let go of them now. And that kind of thing. So I thought that it was really cool just to see the way people entertained whatever. Yeah, okay, that's the way you're characterizing this, but you're human. And they treated her that way and as an equal and someone who is maybe going through something that other people, I think, you know, maybe perhaps where we're from, they might look at it a little bit more like you're sick or, you know, you need treatment or something, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are people like that, the people you described that were helping her, plenty of people like that back home in the States, but it was unusual to see so many people, almost everybody, except us, of course, get involved trying to help and figure it out. And it just seemed like, yeah, she was in good hands there in the middle of Toronto facing these problems. And I've noticed that up here in general, that people do seem to look out for each other a little bit more. Maybe it's a socialized medicine thing they got going, or just maybe more of a, I don't know, I'm not me first type of a nation as much as the U.S. is, where people seem to be willing to help a little bit more. There's more social welfare. There's more trying to get people on their own 2 feet and less judgment. I'm not saying these things don't exist. They do. But it just seems like a healthier environment more conducive to improving people's lives when they're falling upon hard times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks. We're looking for Ludwig Leopold.
Ludwig Leopold.
Not recently.
Not around here.
He owes me money. If you find him, I'm looking for him.
Oh, the guy with curly hair. I saw running low. I saw him like...
He has a show Saturday nights on WSB.
I think so. I think so.
WSB.
Hawkeye?
Can you tell us the last time you saw him?
Last time I saw him, 3 weeks prior to this, in a bar in Tampa Bay.
What was he doing? Playing darts. Who is he playing darts?
The King of Fiji and my good friend John.
What kind of pants was the King of Fiji wearing?
The King of Fiji was wearing a tweed pants.
Tweed pants. Do you know anything about the King of Fiji wearing tweed pants? He was last seen playing darts with Ludwig.
Nah, I try not to get involved in international stuff. WSB.
Someday we'll have a good promo.
Not today.
The Ludwig Leopold program.
Excuse me.
Saturdays
We're
at 7
for Ludwig
p.m.
Leopold?
Ludwig Leopold.
Yeah, kids, Finn with you, WUSB, Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, www.wusb.fm. Tonight, the Daptone and Desco record labels, funk and soul for the next 2 hours, baby. You're going to be grooving and an interview with founder and great sax man, Neil Sugarman. Stay tuned. Plus giveaways. Yeah, tonight we're going to be exploring the Daptone label. And the Daptone label is a label out of Brooklyn, New York, and modeled on the Stax model, and a great, great sound. You would not even be able to tell when some of these records come out. And we're going to have, I have a stack full of giveaways tonight, courtesy of Daptone and WUSB. The first one we're going to give away in about 10 minutes. minutes time, some of this great soul stuff. But right now, we're going to start off with Binky Griptite doing his fantastic intro to the Daptone Gold, one of the CDs that we have tonight. But here's a little bit of Binky telling you what it's all about.
Greetings, soul fans. This is Binky Griptite. Allow me to welcome you to Daptone Gold. Four solid sides of soul. Classics, new and old, from the whole Daptone family. That's right, we got sounds that'll make you get down. Herein is contained many exclusive and prominently unavailable jams. So stay tuned and revel in the enticement of Daptone Gold! Gold. Gold.
Yeah, man, that's the Doctaries, one of my favorite bands from the Desco years. We're going to learn a little bit about Desco and Daptone shortly from Mr. Neil Sugarman, who will be joining us to chat about the Daptone thing, the groove the funk. But right now, I'm going to take, let's see, the first caller who can. I already have some of you calling, and that's pretty cool. I like it. But right now, I'm going to, first caller who can name this Daptone artist. Little tip, their biggest artist currently, I do believe. Give me a call, 631-632-6901, and you will get a copy of this artist's latest album on CD. 631-632-6901, name this artist. Yeah, congratulations to Steven, who got this brand new Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. I learned the hard way. We're going to be hearing the funk all night long. Here's a little something from a band that's been with Daptone since the beginning and with Desco, its predecessor before that, the Sugar Man 3, right here on WUSB Stony Brook.